the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Darren, Donick, and Chase. With host Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe. On Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Final hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this gorgeous Friday afternoon here in Middle Tennessee. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you. Chase will be back on Monday's program. Always enjoy our chats with our next guest. Trent Dilfer is on the line with us. Going to give him an opportunity right out of the gates to brag on his daughters. Trent, how you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, my daughters have made me go to Omaha for 2 days to watch volleyball and go back tomorrow again.
So here's your opportunity. So you've got let's start. So you've got your one daughter at Lipscomb, correct?
My youngest is at Lipscomb. They had a great year. They won the A-Sun, lost to Georgia Tech in the first round of the NCAAs, but played great. And the little freshie got A-Sun freshie of the year in first team all conference. So really proud of her.
Nice, very cool. So you're in Omaha, huh?
I just
World
landed.
Series.
The middle one plays at Louisville, and they were the 11th seed in the country, and they won yesterday. They beat – who'd they beat yesterday? I can't remember who they beat yesterday. Now they're in the Sweet 16 on Sunday. So I came back, work a day or two, and then go back and watch them play in the Sweet 16, hopefully the Elite Eight.
That is awesome. So is that something that they've always done, or did they switch sports? Was volleyball always in their DNA?
Yeah, my sister was All-American at Colorado and won a national championship in club with Kerry Walsh. So Kerry's been a friend of ours for years and got the oldest one, who ended up going to Notre Dame out of high school and ended up playing on the beach in Pepperdine. Kind of got her hooked, and once the oldest was hooked, the other ones were hooked. So we calculated the other day, we've been to over, just for Tori alone, the middle one, we've been to over 800. She's played in over 800 matches since she's been 12. And all three have played since they've been 12. So we're guessing we've seen over 2,300 volleyball matches as parents.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
We should start bringing you on as our volleyball expert, you know?
I think I know more about volleyball than football based on my head coaching record.
Oh, you know, I did want to ask you, George Kittle, I guess, has been working. Was he working out over at Lipscomb? I know that you obviously, with his dad, be understand, you know the family. Stories like that are just great, right? Where you just love a story. Like, the Predators have this Tanner Janot, an undrafted guy who's just, you know, and I know George Kittle, it's not like he was an undrafted, but these guys that just over-excelled people that, you know, they weren't the five-star, they weren't expected to do something, and then here's George Kittle when healthy and in there. I mean, you know, back and forth, arguably the best tight end in the league with Travis Kelce. You've played with guys like that. You've been around that. Hopefully you're coaching guys like that. Just people that have that trait that you can't, you know, you're not going to see on a, you know, a sheet, that just, it's in their DNA, it's in their makeup. They just get it. And they over-excel, and they just turn into something. What is it like being around people like that?
Well, it's awesome. I think it's a neat time of the year to have the conversation, too, around the NFL draft.
Yep.
I think there's a couple of things at play here. Number one, yes, they have part of their DNA just allows them to dig a little deeper, work a little harder, find another way. I call it figure-it-outness. They're going to figure out how to maximize their potential. We're lucky here at Lipscomb, you know, we've had a really nice group of NFL guys, college guys who work out here all the time. We've been able to open for our facilities to allow them to work out. So our kids get to see kind of their habits, their work ethic, their grind. But it was interesting, when I did the draft for ESPN every year, something I always want to talk about day two and day three is that the Pro Bowl, if you look at the Pro Bowl every year, over half the Pro Bowl roster are going to be guys drafted in the late rounds or not drafted at all. It's really kind of an interesting study when you start going to the highest performers in the NFL year in and year out. Many of them were not three-star, four-star, five-star guys, or they weren't high draft picks. Many of them had to work a little harder, had to develop after they got to college. Some still developing in the NFL. And Chris Carter and I used to have this conversation all the time that the NFL, to a certain degree, is still a developmental league. College football, for sure, is a developmental league. Not, you don't end up being what you come in as. It's so common to see entitlement, laziness by the highly recruited guy end up putting them on the streets, and then you see the under-recruited guy, the guy has to fight for everything and understands his body isn't complete, his mind isn't complete, his soul isn't complete. He's still in process, and he maximizes those 4 to 5 years in college and ends up having a healthy NFL career because he approaches it that way.
It is amazing how much focus we put on the first 2 days, and here you are throwing out stuff like that, and that just tells you how vitally important day three is to organizations.
Well, we're not afraid to tell our kids, here at Lipscomb, I honestly believe in my heart of heart, I got 4, 5, 6 guys that are going to play in the NFL on my roster right now in high school, Lipscomb Academy, if they don't get caught up in all the baloney that's going to be sold to them over the next 3 years while they're in high school, and then the 4 to 5 years that they're sold in college football. If they're just pursuing their personal best day in and day out, God's given them a little bit more than the rest of the population. But they got to continue to develop over. They got to develop it every single day to tap it out and to maximize. And if they do that, they have a really good chance of playing the NFL one day.
How much do you talk to – I know because we've had these conversations with you, and I think I know the answer, but I just want you to tell us and our audience listening, because we always get great responses from the listeners when you're on. How much do you – I mean, you're a football coach, but, you know, you're always we quote things when you used to do weeklies with us. We still to this day quote things that you've taught, you know, the quiet time and all that stuff. How much do you talk to them, Trent, about what you're just now relayed to us? Kids that you know have something, but you also know there's a lot of things that they're going to have to deal with. I mean, look what the Titans just went through with Isaiah Wilson, their first-round pick. Yep. And who knows if that kid's ever going to suit up and play another game in the NFL. He's a first-round pick last year. How much do you talk to them about stuff like that?
Relentlessly. We're relentless in pouring into them about chasing their personal best. And that's from guy 112 on our roster to guy 1 on our roster. That's for, you know, young people taking tours when they come on campus to see if Lipscomb was the right school for them. That we are going to try to identify the things they do really well and the things they need to improve upon and help enhance that journey as they chase their best. We figure that if you're chasing your personal best, everything God's given you, that it's going to overflow in the academic bucket, it's going to overflow in the social bucket, it's going to overflow in the spiritual bucket, and it's going to overflow in the football bucket, the baseball bucket. We have tons of dual sport athletes here. Our baseball team's killing it right now. They're 8-1, blowing up Division II, the region, because we have a lot of guys who just bought into pursuing their best and figuring that it's going to pour into all the different buckets. So we do it constantly. We got more coaches I know what to do with, and they know the messaging for me every single morning we meet as a staff. It's now deploy and go do everything you can to try to get these kids to reach their personal best.
We're talking to Trent Dilfer, and Trent, you've talked and taught us a lot about, you know, how the quarterback position is being taught, going back years now, and the evolution that's happening. There's an interesting article that caught my attention on ESPN's website, why wide receivers are taking over the NFL draft. And it just got me thinking, well, all of these quarterback tutelage places, they're all throwing the ball to somebody. How much do you think there's been evolution in how the wide receiver position is being taught?
Oh, it's massive. It's probably right next to the quarterback position. 7-on-7 has really changed the landscape of football. It's done really well in parts of the country. It's done really bad in parts of the country, but it's still kids running around playing catch. You know, 7-on-7 was designed to be a drill, and somehow it's become a sport, but it's a great drill, and it's a great drill to develop receiver play. It's a great drill to develop a receiving tight end play. It's a great drill to develop quarterback play if done properly. There's a lot of quote-unquote gurus out there. I follow a couple on Instagram that do high-level receiver training. You have a lot of NFL guys that have stepped into the wide receiver training landscape. So there's a lot of good information out there. And there's the accessibility, you know, to be able to go on YouTube and pull up Chris Carter, one of the greatest receivers of all time, doing a clinic on wide receiver play, Matthew Hatchett, who's a great young coach, Keenan McCardle, who's a great player and now a great coach, all these guys with Nike and Under Armour and Adidas and their camp series and the coaches, they get to come out and coach. There's just a lot of good information out there. And then I think it's become expected, too, that you got to do a little bit more. That it, receivers not just run fast, jump high, catch the ball. You know, there's this myth forever that the biggest, baddest Willie and Joe was going to be the biggest, baddest wide receiver in college football in the NFL. And then the right messaging took over that, yeah, you got to have a certain amount of athleticism, but it's a craft. Getting open is a craft. Playing wide receiver is a craft. We have one here who I think is going to play football for a very, very long time named Coleman Baker, who's an absolute craftsman. He's a young kid that's very talented, very athletic, but more importantly, he's always looking for the nuance to find a way to get open, to find a way to create space, to help his quarterback out. You get enough of those guys, and then when they're 6'3 and run 4.32 and have 42-inch vertical leaps, and they take the position, the craftsmanship of the position serious, then they become big-time NFL players, and that's what you're seeing. And just the balls being thrown more. I mean, golly, I'm so old now. I remember when you would throw it only on third down. Right. And now you're crazy if you're not throwing it 65% of the time. So the game's just evolved and the players have evolved with it.
I remember the first year I played football in pads. I had played a bunch of flag football. And the coach told me that they threw 10 passes last year. And I said, 10 passes per game? He said, no, we threw 10 passes in the season. And I was like, wait a minute, this is not what I signed up for. I want to throw the ball a little bit, but you're right. It's come a long way. So Trent, do you think for these reasons you're saying, because the Titans are looking for that next AJ Brown. I don't know if they'll use their first round pick on a wide receiver, but they're looking for some help there to replace Corey Davis. Do you think it's easier to go find a guy who's ready to jump in and be ready to contribute, even if you get him in the second or third or fourth round?
Absolutely, and I think the Titans are looking for the right kind of guy, too. Like, I really, really buy into how they draft. You know, they, yes, traits are important, and yes, you know, a certain amount of athleticism is required to be a top-level player in the NFL, but it also takes grit and toughness, and you got to find perimeter guys that are willing to block on the perimeter. If you're a Tennessee Titan wide receiver, you better strap it on every week, baby. It's the same as being a Lipscomb Mustang wide receiver. You got to earn the right to catch the ball by how you block. We preach it every hour of every day to our receivers that you will not catch a football until you can prove that you can go out there and help in the running game and help and be physical. And the Titans are the same way, that you got to be not just willing. You got to love getting out there on the perimeter and getting dirty and getting ugly and blocking safeties and digging out backers, and that's got to be part of your DNA, and you can find those guys and you can develop them. You have really good coaches. The kid has the work ethic, the kid has the want to, you can help develop them, and they can become big time players. It's just, it might take a little bit longer than the freak that can just show up and have the longer leash because he's so freakishly athletic. You may have to be a little more patient with the development of a second, third, fourth round wide receiver. If he's the right kind of guy, he's going to help you win more games than the flashy and sizzly guy.
You just said on something a little bit earlier that I think is fascinating, the ability to go on YouTube and find, I mean, almost anything about anything, but in particular, get some instruction, right? Some personal, maybe little tips, whether it's football or another sport, and how that might fall in line with what your coach might be teaching you for your team, or how it might differ. And how do you balance the two? You ever think about that? Because you're right. You could find so many different viewpoints, and I think it's all good, but you have to maybe process it with, does it fit into it with what my team is doing?
Yeah, I think you find a lot of coaches that are intimidated. So you find a lot of coaches out there that they know their way, and that's the only way they know. So anything counter to that, they're intimidated, and they don't want their players to learn it because it's going to come back to them, and they're going to be left speechless. I think that's one of the biggest things you find in the high school space, are coaches that are just intimidated of what's out there, the next level of coaching. What we try to do here is we try to have an open dialogue with our players. And we're like, listen, go learn cool stuff and then come back to us and say, hey, this is what I'm learning and I really like it. Does it fit with how we do it? And then we'll say, you know what? It should. That's better than we teach it. So we're going to change how we teach it and do it that way because we just learned. Or we'll say, you know what? I totally understand why they do it that way, and it works for them. We do it this way because, and we're constantly trying to teach them the why. So we're not, you know, we're not taking sides on what's right or wrong. It's just, you know, Engel's going to do it differently than at CPA than I do it here at Lipscomb. By the way, his way works. They got after us, right? So his way's a good way. It may not be our way. So we're going to do it. We're going to try to find a balance with the kids. We want them to keep learning. We want them to keep growing, keep stretching, and keep asking why. And it's our job to go answer the why. And then I have one of my best coaches. I saw him do something a couple days ago. When he didn't know the answer, he says, I don't know that answer. I'm going to get back to you with that answer. And I think that's not common enough in coaching these days at all levels, is where coaches are willing to admit that they don't have all the answers. But we'll go get the answer for you, son. You know, whether I'm in the NFL, in the college football, in the high school space, that we're going to go find a way to get the answer so we can help you get better at something you want to get better at.
Last thing, Trent, we had this conversation with Tim last hour about the quarterbacks in the draft. We're less than 2 weeks out. So I want to pick your quarterback guys as well. Just, I'm going to leave it just wide open for you. Maybe one guy that has grabbed your attention in whatever way, take it however you want, but who's a quarterback that intrigues you that's coming out in this draft?
Well, I really like the whole group. I'm sure Tim and I had lunch the other day, so we're kind of on the same page with these guys. So whatever he said, I kind of co-sign on whatever he said. Trey Lance is the one that I find most fascinating. I think he has the ceiling to be as good as anybody. But the problem is that he just doesn't have the reps. And not just starts. Don't get caught up in starts. And this is where a lot of, I've been reading some stuff on the plane today, guys talking about starts. It's more the times being the quarterback. Now think about this. Let's take Jake McNamara, who's the quarterback at Page High School, who's going to be a really good player. Jake McNamara has been the quarterback since he's been a freshman in Nevada. And then he's throwing 7-on-7. He's run the show. His brother was the quarterback, Kay, who's at Michigan. He's seen what it looks like to be the quarterback in the meeting room, in the 7-on-7, in a team meeting room, in the locker room, on a Monday, on a Thursday. He's taking first-team reps as a sophomore, junior. He'll do them as a senior. He's just going to be the quarterback a lot. He's going to go to college, and he's going to be the quarterback a lot and make quarterback-type decisions every single day and have quarterback-type responsibilities every single day. And he's going to keep throwing it, and messing up and correcting it and getting better and better and better. Well, some of these guys, Trevor Lawrence is at 90-plus starts, but tens of thousands of opportunities of being the quarterback. Trey hasn't been the quarterback that much. He is only a quarterback for a couple of years in high school in Minnesota. They ran a wing T. They didn't really throw it that much. You didn't have to make a ton of high-level decisions. And he goes to North Dakota State. He redshirts, so he's kind of being the quarterback. Then he plays his freshman year. He's the quarterback. And then he plays one game this year. He's the quarterback. And he's going to go to the NFL. He's going to be competing with guys in his developmental journey that have had 10x the opportunities of being the quarterback. And I think that's the conversation that's getting talked about enough, is how often have you been the quarterback? Because the more you've been the quarterback and make quarterback decisions on and off the field, the faster you'll integrate to the NFL. I hope he goes somewhere like Washington and they can play him every preseason snap and let him be the quarterback and then sit him down and watch somebody else play and be the quarterback, and he can be the quarterback in practice. If he gets the right developmental plan and his journey goes, hopefully as I see it going, I think Trey Lance can be as good as any of these guys. And I think this group's going to be really good. I'm very bullish on this group. By the way, I've been bullish on the group the last three or four groups just because quarterbacks are so cool to watch develop these days. They're different. They have different skill sets. You have some operators. You have some artists. You have some, you know, Ferraris, you have some Ford Raptors. I mean, you got all different kinds of shapes and sizes and abilities, and they all fit now in the NFL because coaches are getting better at just taking whatever quarterback they have and fitting their offense around them instead of trying to put a square peg in a round hole.
Yep, good points, as always. Trent, really appreciate the visit. Best of luck to the Dodgers moving forward. Hopefully they can crush it, and we'll talk to you down the road. Thanks for doing this, as always.
Always fun, guys. See you.
All right. That is Trent Dilfer, Lipscomb Academy. Always good talks with him, and we always learn something when you talk to him, which is fun. All right, we'll come back. More on the other side. Darren, Donnick, and Chase, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. It's that time to text in. Do those exercises. Up, down, up, down. Get ready. You know we've teamed up with T-Mobile. It's time to give away a hockey home gating party. It's a Dos Equis prize pack. This is a chance to win the Dos Equis prize pack, which includes a case of beer, dessert from Nothing Bundt Cakes, a T-Mobile prize pack, food provided by 312 Pizza Company in Germantown. And remember, as always, you must be 21 years of age or older to enter. Today's keyword is
ice.
Today's keyword is
ice.
Text ICE into 615-737-1025. 737-1025.
You got to be super quick. That's three letters, man. Boom, boom, boom. It's gone.
Super quick. That's why I had you doing the exercises.
Yeah.
ICE. There's a chance. And by the way, we've been doing this for, I don't know, 3-4 weeks, and you guys have been crushing it with the text. They'll just come. They come flowing in. So good luck. We've got a lot of stuff away today, which is good. Looks like the Braves, Kyle Wright on the bump today for the Braves.
He just got called up this morning.
Yeah.
From the alternate site.
And that was a surprise to me. I had been reading that Bryce Wilson, another young guy on the staff who had some big moments in the postseason last year, was the guy that had the inside track. And so I drafted accordingly in my National League only auction, which is insane. In terms of the depth chart, you got to go way down on the depth chart. And it's Kyle Wright that gets the start. So I'm happy for Kyle. And, you know, winding it back to last year, remember, he just started to figure it out late in the season. He had an excellent start in the playoff series against the Marlins and then had the nightmare start against the Dodgers in the LCS where just it went wrong early. So I'm curious to see if he can continue to move forward because you know, they had passed over him in the initial thing. So why did they call him up? Did something happen? Oh, yeah, Max Fried is hurt. That's right.
Fried's hurt. Yep.
I forgot about that.
Right now, let's see, we got a fly. Ooh, not good. Fly ball to the wall. Looks like a double to start the game. No? A very long single to start the game. That's Wrigley Field for you. Hits one off the wall in the air, and it's a single.
It's coming off the ivy. I mean, the ivy isn't fully grown yet, right? So it's coming off the brick pretty hard. Is that what happened?
Yeah, no, it did. It came back to him really quick. Yep.
Maybe in another month or two, that would have stuck in there.
Yep.
There's always some great bloopers of the ball getting lost in the ivy at Wrigley. Think about how crazy that is, that in this day and age, you still have a brick wall with ivy on it. I mean, I love that it's there. But, like, the way guys go back on the ball in outfields now and the way that they, you know, it's routine to see guys leap up and catch and go crashing into the fence. You don't do that at Wrigley.
No.
If you want to live.
That'd be a bad idea. If you want to stay healthy.
Yeah.
If you want to play the next game. I would encourage people. I did this, I don't know, probably, I want to say 7-8 years ago. If you ever get a chance, you're in Chicago, and in this case, the Cubs were away. Do the Wrigley tour. It's a lot of fun. You know, with the ballpark with that history, it's really cool. Kind of what they just tell you a lot about. You know, it's how a lot of this stuff all happened at Wrigley and the ivy and just all that. So if you ever get a chance and you're in Chicago, it's worth it. It's well worth it. Wife and
I've never been down underneath.
We really enjoyed it.
I've never been down underneath to see what it looks like. I've heard, remember for a long time, there was a lot of complainers from other teams saying, yeah, I know this is a real nostalgic place and what you see as a fan is awesome.
Oh, the visiting clubhouse is a joke. I mean, it's a joke.
You've seen it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's as bad as what they say.
It's embarrassing.
Like White Sox fans love to rip on the Cubs, like, you know, nice facility.
Yeah, it's embarrassing. The clubhouses are embarrassing. And they've actually, extended them a little bit. They've tried to, like, make them bigger. But, yeah, to think that a Major League Baseball team, or teams in this case, even the Cubs, even the home team, it's not, you know. Because I'm sure it's got to be tough. You go around to these places and all these, you know, new ballparks, and, you know, the clubhouses are probably outstanding.
State of the art,
outstanding, and you're like, oh, so this is how the other half lives. Okay. And, yeah, that's great to have all the nostalgia and the history and everything that we're talking about, but these guys are used to a certain standard. And like I said, the visiting one is just, it's absurd. Like, you know, it's, I was going to say high school level, but I think that may be insulting to high schools.
You know, it's what's interesting bad. Is right now, I don't think anybody would even think of replacing Wrigley Field or Fenway Park. But remember way back, and this has been like 25 years ago, there was a strong movement. They had actually planned to replace Fenway Park mm-hmm. in Boston. And there was a Save Fenway campaign. Like, they even had some pretty diehard baseball fans saying, yeah, you know what, it is kind of time to do a new Fenway. But people are like, wait a minute, what are we thinking? Because mm-hmm. Fenway's got the same issues, right, with the clubhouses and the room, even for the home team. It's not, there's just not enough room down there with yeah. a structure that old. Mm-hmm. They could never plan for something like that. So it's a trade-off. Like Tiger Stadium, there's some people that still wish the Tiger Stadium was still there, you know? But it just, they decided to go the other way and say, you know what, we just can't, it's just so decrepit, we can't renovate it, and we got to have a new one. But I kind of wish that they had kept it going and found a way to keep it.
The outfield hanging over the?
Oh, yeah,
the
but that's part of the fun,
deck
right?
Hanging over the outfield?
That's part of the fun. But it was more about the fans, like the concourses and the bathrooms and stuff. They said it was just awful. I never went to Tiger Stadium, but they said it just got so run down that they couldn't do anything.
They were preserving that for a long time. It was a historical landmark, but I don't think that's the case.
No, it's
anymore,
gone now.
Right? It's gone.
Yeah, I wish it was still up. I never got a chance to even go in it to see it, even without a game.
Kyle Wright gets a grounder to short after he hit Contreras, so second and third.
Oof.
Right now, what's one out.
What's the weather situation?
Looks a little nippy because they're dressed. I mean, it's not snowing, but the people in the stands have coats on, and the players are wearing sleeves, so probably a little bit of a nip in the air.
I've been to in 2010, the Predators played the Blackhawks. For the first time in the playoffs. And, you know, as we know, the Blackhawks won the cup. But that was, I went to a game at Wrigley right around this time. It would have been mid-April. Boy, was it cold. It can be nip. You're lucky if you just survive an April game. Like, if it's 40 degrees, you take it. Because it can be worse, right?
Oh, I went to many games.
The first time I ever went to
Jake
there was in
April,
June, and
freezing.
I was like, I did not bring enough clothes.
Oh yeah,
it's like June. Yeah, I'm good to go. June? No,
no,
no. You're not in the clear. Bring
you're not
bring
in
a
the
couple
clear.
Sweatshirts.
No, I remember going to an Indians game the weekend before Memorial Day weekend. Think about it. That's late May, third weekend in May. I think the high that day was like 39 degrees. It's the weekend prior to Memorial Day weekend. Freezing. It's like, this is ridiculous. I got to get out of here. I got to go back to the South.
Yeah.
This is absurd. Too much. I thought that was a third strike. Not a third strike. Yeah, it was third strike. All right, two outs. Second, third. Kyle Wright, maybe you can get out of this jam.
You know, there's so many Vanderbilt players playing now. I think the number is up to 17. Am I right, Max? The other night, I got home from the Predators game. I'm flipping the channels. The Dodgers are on against the Rockies. And first of all, this is how good the Dodgers are. They just bring in David Price out of the bullpen in the seventh inning. They're up like 6-2 or 6-1. Must be nice to have a $30 million reliever just waiting to move up the ranks. They got so many pitchers, it's unreal. And then Ben Bowden is pitching for the Rockies. So two Vanderbilt guys going head-to-head out of Dodger Stadium. Just flip on the TV, and there it is. So now you got Kyle Wright here. They're everywhere now, and there's more on the way.
Listen to this. So I had to call Vince Ferrara during the break. I had to ask him a question about something on the UFC side. Because, you know, he does an MMA hour in Knoxville and podcast. And so I wanted to ask him something about that. And I said, hey, enjoy, because he's going to be there for all three games, you know, series covering.
He calls the games on for Tennessee radio, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey, enjoy the series. We'll have fun talking about it on Monday. He told me this, and he'll bring it up on Monday. This is mind-blowing, really. The more I keep thinking about it. This is the first time any Tennessee team has only the – I think the he said the Lady Vols did it once, maybe? The only time a Tennessee team has hosted a top three team in the country in any sport. And I think he said the Lady Vols did it once. So this is only the second time it's ever happened.
In any sport?
In any sport. Hosting. That's the key word, hosting. So – this is a big deal.
Wait, I may be misunderstanding. You're talking about this includes football?
Yeah. Yep.
So at no point, like Kentucky in basketball or Alabama in football, where am I missing here?
I don't know. We'll dive into it on Monday. It was very quick. I had to, you know,
that can't
break,
be so. Right.
No?
Or is he talking about for a series?
Well, you got to remember, in basketball, it would have to be timed up. It doesn't mean, you know, the time when they came there, they weren't, right? I mean, sometimes that happens. It's like...
But, like, Bruce Pearl had some good teams, right? Bruce Pearl got them to number one. But they never... Remember, they came in as... So, they never hosted a Kentucky during that time. I guess you're right. I guess
maybe it was
more possible than I thought.
Max is saying a top three matchup. Okay, where both teams are in the top three. Maybe that's
what I'm thinking, like Danny Werfel and Peyton Manning going head to head in the 90s. That was never a top three?
No.
No?
No.
Come on, like 96, mm-mm. When you knew like early in the season that matchup, Tennessee, Florida, was for all the marbles because the loser was not going to, the winner still was. In the picture for the national title, the loser was probably not. That was not a top three?
Nope. Not according to what he said. He looked it up. So it's pretty interesting.
Interesting.
So it is going to be a fun weekend there for that series. And a lot of eyeballs will be on. A lot of people excited.
So Lady Vols, UConn never played in Knoxville in a top three?
That may be the matchup. I'll be curious. We'll have to make sure that we get him to expound on that on Monday. He will.
Because I know we're talking about like Tennessee and the opposition, both in the top three. This is what we're looking for. But I'm just stunned that it's not. He said the first one ever?
Second.
Second one ever.
Yep. Lady Vols.
Lady Vols has got to be the UConn. That's got to be one of them, right?
Yep. So we'll come back and we'll put a bow on Friday's edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase. We'll do that on the other side. ESPN 102.5, The Game. Don't forget, starting on Monday, listen every weekday for your chance to win $1,000. Yes, it's The Game's 1K payday. Be listening on Monday. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Good discussions today. We had Kevin Allen talking a little hockey with him in the first hour. Vanderbilt new women's basketball coach, Shea Ralph. Tim Hasselbeck and Trent Dilfer today. So we've covered a lot of ground. And it's going to be another big weekend of sports. By the way, Kyle Wright worked his way out of that. He had second and third and one out right now. No score right now in the top of the second between the Cubs and the Braves. Looks like a cold, windy day. At Wrigley Field. So
but not as bad as it is in Denver, where they have postponed the Mets-Rockies because of a snowstorm.
Well, after seeing the video that you sent me, that it's not like I fell out of my chair when I saw that they postponed it. That
smart
was pretty
idea.
Easy to see. Yeah, pretty easy to see. Okay, let's get back into tomorrow. Predators in Raleigh to take on the Hurricanes. Another 6 o'clock start. Pete Weber and Hal Gill will have your call. I'll have pregame for you at 5. And then a huge next week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Blackhawks here Monday at the United Center Wednesday and Friday. So the next 4 games are essential, really, to maybe seeing how this is all going to play out for the Predators. Now they've got the opportunity to try to rebound. They have not fared well against Carolina this season. They're 0-4-1 against the Hurricanes. So that'll be the 6th matchup of the year. They'll have 2 more after tomorrow night's contest. But how do you see tomorrow night playing out after last night? It kind of went south after that late first period goal.
I think it's a great challenge just because, you know, Nashville was, especially in that second period, there was a level that Carolina hit that had to make an impression to say, wow, that was tough to keep up with. So Nashville is going to have to dig down deep and find another way. I thought Nashville did a pretty good job of staying with it. You know, you can tell the way they're playing. Still, it didn't let things completely unravel, which we had seen early in the season, right? That type of game, they were ended up losing 5-1 or 6-1, right? That happened a few times. You know, they got it to 3-1. So it was, you know, they had that penalty they took, a silly penalty at the end, too many men on the ice and allowed them to get a power play goal. That was a little bit of a stinger because, you know, you could have felt good about things. You in the penalty killing department, they would have gone 2-for-2 with a shorthanded goal. That would have been like a mini victory. But instead, you got a glimpse of just how great Carolina's power play is. It's number one in the league. You think about all the great power plays out there, you know, Dreisaitl and McDavid and in Edmonton, Tampa Bay's power play,
Chicago's power play.
I mean, there's tons of them. But Dallas. Carolina is number one.
Dallas. I mean, everybody Dallas, in the yeah. everybody in the Central, other than Detroit and Columbus, you know, and Nashville have been the top 6 power play units. They've been hovering around somewhere between 1 through 8. I feel like there's been a stretch where every time they played either Chicago, Carolina, or Tampa, at the time they were like the number one power play unit in the league, 1 or 2.
Yeah. Well, that's a big part of tomorrow because it's official now. Not that it wasn't before. I think they were aware of it. They just have not figured out, and they haven't had a lot of power play chances, so it hasn't hurt them. But they've struggled on the power play since Tolvanen went out. There's no secret to it now. So tomorrow, that's a big facet, and containing the number one power play in the league, right? Tell me how that goes, and that may be where you start your discussion on whether they can bounce back and find a way to get a win.
Wasn't it strange how many 4-on-4 situations there were in the first 2 periods?
Oh, there was a bunch. That's the most I think they've had in any one game this year.
I told Pete that during the second period intermission. I said, that's got to be the most, right? Like, I can never remember. And Pete brought up a good point. It wasn't like it was, high stick here on the Predators, and then 10 seconds later, you know, a hook, right? These were like offsetting penalties, basically. You know, penalties where two guys are going to the box at the same time creating the 4-on-4. It was just very bizarre. I don't remember a time when they had that many 4-on-4 situations for a full 2 minutes like they had last night.
I agree. I didn't go back and look, but I think that is, without looking it up, I would say that was the case. I would guess that's the most 4-on-4 they played. Now, Carolina, when you have Aho and Svechnikov, that's a dangerous group in 4-on-4. You know, I don't know if you'd want that too many times, but you know, that's the way the game flows. You gotta deal with it.
By the way, what are they gonna do about making up? There's games continuing to get. I just saw where the Avs and Keens are postponed. When you look at Vancouver, they're pretty much like they've got like 7 games in hand on most teams. How are they going to make these up? Are they going to make them up? Or is Vancouver so far behind they're like, eh, don't worry. I mean, what are they going to do?
Well, Vancouver is 10 points out. They have three games in hand on Montreal, who also has played less games than a lot of teams.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a sticky wicket.
I know.
I don't know. You feel like they're going to have to maybe extend the regular season to get it all in there.
But what are you going to do, an extra week to 2 weeks?
Not 2 weeks. Hopefully you got to – maybe you can't delay more than about a week, right?
Well, you can only play so many games in a week. So how are you gonna make up? I mean, most teams in the league, they are 6-7 games behind. Most teams in the league.
Well, they have said, right, that there is a possibility that you would have to just say we have to have a deal where not everybody plays the same amount of games,
yep.
And you have to go by points percentage.
That's what it feels like.
But that could create a really controversial thing. Now, Vancouver would have to make an amazing run when they do get back on the ice to make it significant.
Where it will get interesting or weird in the North is if Montreal continues to slide and Calgary jumps up there and, you know, and Montreal's got all these games in hand, right?
You're right. That's where you would have a pretty interesting discussion. You're saying if Calgary surges and they've got the same amount of points, but Montreal has played three less games, or even Calgary has an extra point or two.
They're like a point ahead of Montreal.
Yeah,
on the
and
stands.
They didn't make up the games, and Montreal by points percentage gets it. You'd have a pretty good argument there.
And they've got Montreal's got three games in hand. Like, what do you do? Like, at that point, I think you would have to – but I just – the whole Vancouver thing, they're completely out of it. So I don't know what you do. They have so many they've only played 37 games. Like I said, most teams are like 43, 44.
I think they've said if the games are insignificant, not just to Vancouver, but the teams that are supposed to play, then they wouldn't worry about missing those games.
They just go away.
The key would be, do you need to make up – some games at the end that would make a big difference in the standings. But when you don't have it, when you're kind of leaving it open, but you haven't decided, you're leaving yourself open to debate too on what's the right thing to do. There may not be an easy answer.
Yep. By the way, go Red Wings again on Saturday.
Go Red Wings, go Jackets.
Yeah. And it'll be big tilt. Down in Tampa again, Panthers and Lightning. Of course, Predators, Hurricanes. Columbus is in Dallas to take on the Stars, and Chicago in Detroit to take on the Red Wings. It'll be a lot. It'll be very interesting to see how all this plays out over the weekend. Of course, you've got Tennessee and Vanderbilt. Lots of things to discuss on Monday. So that will do it for us today. Enjoy your weekend. Continue to be safe. And like I said, we will have tons to discuss Monday morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then. Stay tuned. Stillman & Company is next.